Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Alex Winwood, it's a pleasure to have you on my podcast. I've been looking forward to have you on. And first question is, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing good, my bro. Like, you know, life's, you know, back to normal, and, you know, we're just chilling out and enjoying family. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Same as you. So you're obviously in Perth. That's probably the only place that's life is as normal as it can be in Australia. You're back home with family.
Yeah, man. Like, pretty much came home, took like, I think maybe the rest of the week off. I got back on like a Tuesday. I was back at work the following Monday, and yeah, just try to catch up with as many people and as I could. And yeah, once work started, it was just like, just felt like I'd never left, eh?
Yeah, no, I like that. And obviously, just to track back, firstly, congratulations on the debut on the Olympics. I know we had a few chats and at the village, and you were disappointed with your results. And I thought about it, like, 5 years ago, I was you. I was so disappointed at my performance. And then, you know, a few years later, you're like, man, I'm so grateful to actually be considered one of the greatest to go to the Olympic Games and represent my country. So just a little bit about the Olympics. Tell me a bit about your experience, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, when we had chats, thank you for congratulating me as well. Congratulations to you as well. But yeah, when we had chats and that, you know, it was pretty much like, you know, a few days afterwards. Like, I think I was only there for an extra week while I was at the games. And the emotions were raw and things like that. And I could be a little bit abrupt sometimes when, you know, when things don't go my way. But, you know, back, I think quarantine was probably the best solution to like all of my shortcomings and things like that. You know, after the games, like, it wasn't like just coming back and seeing everyone and like, you know, kind of like not having that time to yourself and be able to think about things. So I really like enjoyed quarantine for that period, is just like being able to think about them things and like acknowledging the people that have helped me along the way and really thinking about that. It was so much like a bit overwhelming, like thinking of every person, like, you know, at like local level, then state level, national level, and like all these people that have helped along the way, really helped ground myself and like, you know, be thankful for actually getting the opportunity to be at the game. So all in all, I'm very happy to get there. You know, the games was like no other, but it's just made me hungry to get back there in Paris.
Yeah, and you speak so well about, you know, being hungry, and sport's all about resilience. Obviously, you do have those ups and downs, and of course, you know, the first few days after that, you feel devastated, and now I can see you bouncing back. And obviously, you took a little bit of time off, spent time with family, but still, at the end of the day, there's still that performance space, and we've got 3 years to go. What's your plans leading up, I guess, in the next 3 years?
Yeah, so I had a lot of questions in quarantine, which that was probably the bad thing, is like, I had all these thoughts and that, and then I was like, okay, well, I need to do this, and I need to do that, I need to speak to this person, like, so I had all these questions, but no answers, which probably after the first week when I kind of got stuck in my head a little bit too much, that's when I just kind of, you know, dropped all the thoughts and just thought, all right, well, look, I understand that I'm in here. There's people at the games, like the head coach and Boxing Australia and all that I want to talk to and kind of get the ball rolling. But I was like, now's not the time. I just need to wait till I get back. Let everyone get home and spend time with their families and then start asking the questions. So it's only kind of started of recent. Spoke to the head coach the other day of the national team, Kevin Smith, and he just wants to know what my plans are going into next year and that. I've opted out of going to the World Championships, which would have been about now or maybe next month, I think it is. It was just very fast turnaround. By the time we got back to Australia out of quarantine, I think I had like 7 weeks or something. So I was after a five-month camp and then going to the games and doing all the quarantine, everybody was like, I can't do that. And And my employer's been really good to me, BAE Systems. They've taken me on as an apprentice. I've had 5 months off of work. And I thought, it's a bit rough to get home and just say, look, I'm going over to Siberia and it's going to be like 2 weeks there and 2 weeks in quarantine. It's another month. So I was just like, I really need to just get back and get into the gist of things and plan for next year rather than in a few months' time. So I'm looking forward to the Comm Games. Boxing's kind of picking their weight classes at the moment, so they just want to see who's going to be available for next year and that. And so I've obviously put my hands up. We're trying to figure out how I can stay active between now and then, whether it's amateur or pro. So it's just about kind of looking at the pros and cons of everything. I'd like to have some pro fights in that, if possible, but COVID's also a hindrance on both amateur and pro. Either someone can't get in, or I go out and I've got to quarantine. And for my apprenticeship, it's just pretty much a little bit too heavy right now, even with my relationships at home, like with my coach and my partner and things like that. I'd rather be a pro at the moment just so I can fight in Australia and it's not, you know, months away from home again. So if possible, that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, and you speak so much about, I mean, your head coach and the support team you have around you. I always credit my support team quite a lot to what I do, but my support team is quite diverse as a person. I've got a bunch of mentors, obviously, and then I realized probably you should have, maybe for me, the way it worked for me is like, I got to have less mentors and keep that still element of me believing in myself and taking those chances. Because I think when I was taking advice from every single person, it's kind of hard. And then you miss that element of just believing yourself a little bit longer. Just firstly, the first question is, what does your support team like? Because mine looks like a coach, a manager, an agent, and then you got training partners and all that. What does your support consist of?
So there's like two elements of it. So pretty much all of my general training and leading into a benchmark event, it's just me and my home coach, Brian Satori. So it's basically me and him training in a shed in little Mandra, Western Australia. So that's probably 90% of my whole year is just doing that, because I wasn't categorized before the Olympics. So I never was too much away from with the national team. Like I'd go to the benchmark events after winning a nationals and getting on an Australian team and going to world championships or whatever. But other than that, I was really at home. The dynamic changes when we go onto the national team, you know, the head coach of the national team takes over and I just speak to my coach back home and things like that. But, you know, he really takes over and then we bring in a bunch of assistant coaches and things like that. So when you get to that level, I think you just got to be real flexible and be able to just go with whoever's in your corner.
Yeah. And you also speak about, obviously, there's a lot of challenges in sports and you speak about having to work. You know, I know sometimes in my sport where I had to work, sometimes the challenge was always try to find that balance where you have this dream of trying to achieve, but you also still got to make an income and make money and having to work. Yeah. How do you balance that? Especially that's a good question for a lot of people now that have dreams to chase that doesn't financially help at the moment and you have to go through school or still have to go through training and stuff like that. So how do you balance through the both two?
I was pretty fortunate with how I came across my job. One of my friends from when I played football back when I was like 15, his dad is a supervisor at my work and they helped me do a lot of fundraising and things like that before, you know, leading up to the Olympics and things like that. But about 2 years before the games, he offered me a job as a trades assistant out there. So pretty much took that. And then when benchmark events come, they let me do leave without pay and they let me go for as long as I need. But that's only for a few weeks out of the year. Once I start getting to them points, but you know, I start work at 6 o'clock and leading up to the games the whole year before I was waking up at 3:45 or 3:50 or something like that and getting to the gym or getting out on the track on, I think it was 4:15, working for an hour, gets to like 10:05, it's still pitch black and it's freezing cold. And I'm like, damn, I'm quick, hurry up, have a shower wherever I was and chuck the work clothes on, get to work, work for 8 hours, finish at 2:30 and then go pretty much straight from there, come home, which was like in between home, the gym and work. And then, yeah, just have a quick feed and get straight to the gym and then train till like, I think it was like 7:30 maybe, and get home at 8 o'clock. So, yeah, it was running off my feet pretty much, like wake up, get out of the house at 4 o'clock and I'm home at 8 o'clock at night. And, you know, as crazy as that sounds and like, you know, people think, oh, that's like, you know, that's so good, blah, blah, blah. Like there's a lot of, as much as good as there is in that and like trying to stay like goal focused, like other things do suffer. I was young at the time. I didn't realize that my relationships around me were like, you know, they were on thin, you know, thin ice. And like, I give it up to everyone that was around me and understanding how goal focused I was. But I think that was the biggest thing I came out of the Olympics is to be very aware of like relationships and time spent with them. Cause when they kind of go to, you know, to bad waters and things like that, it does affect your performance at sport. So you can't just be like, oh, you know, I've got to go to the gym at this time and blah, blah, blah. You know, you got to keep them relationships going because those are the people that help you all the time and like, you know, get around you. And when them relationships, you know, go under, it's quite hard to stay focused in what you do.
Yeah. And I agree. And I think well-being is really important and I credit well-being for being like mentally, I always say I have to be mentally fit first before achieving yep. things on the track. And part of being mentally fit is the relationships that I have to sustain. And they do become hard, obviously, as an athlete and you've got a lot of goals. And like you said, man, you just, that's kind of insane just hearing that. You're like just waking up at 3 a.m. and doing all that. Like what's the drive? What's the goal? And because I think even me as an athlete, I don't even know that. Like you'd be waking yep. up in the morning, and that's, I think that's why it's unique for us to tell our stories in our own words, and you get to pick up a lot, and which then begs the question, like what's the drive? Like there's got to be a burning desire, there's got to be a drive there or a goal.
Yeah, so I think at first it was just like very self-rewarding. Like it was all about, oh yeah, I want to win, I want to do this and that. It comes a point where like that's just not enough, and like, you know, your priorities change. And I think for me it was like I lost my best friend just after Rio qualifications, and I just remember him at a party just saying like, oh, he's gonna go to the Olympics, blah blah blah, this and that. And I think what, like I was his pallbearer, and it was just very, very hard for me at the time. I kind of like whenever something went wrong outside of boxing and that there, like I'd always go back to boxing to focus myself. And I took a little bit of time off, a couple of weeks. It was probably the longest point that I've taken off at that boxing at that time. And then I just realized that it wasn't just for me. There was a lot of people that's helped me. There's a lot of people that was counting on me to fulfill their dreams as well. So yeah, that was probably a big drive that's pushed me this whole time. And just thinking like, it's not just my dream. It was like my coach's dream to have an Olympic athlete. You know, it's like, it was a lot of other people's aspirations for me to do well. So it became a lot easier when I looked at it in through them lens.
Yeah. And I see communities major for you to influence your heritage, and I'm Indigenous Australian. I see it right there on your bio. I guess one, what does it mean for you as Indigenous Australian and the culture and like who you are as a person?
Yeah, I think like most minorities, like we kind of like have our ties to our background, like very, very strong. It's like a part of our identity, you know. Just I think from now on, like whenever I would introduce myself, like being an Olympian is part of my identity. Like I introduce myself as a Noongar man first and foremost. Like whenever I go to any person's country, like I know my mate from the Philippines, he asks me, it was like the first time I went away, he goes, Alex, why are you brown and the rest of them are white? it became like one of the most beautiful relationships I've ever had. And like I explained it to him, I was like, look, I'm Indigenous, you know, my people were, you know, here in Australia first, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh yeah. Like, so, I wear it on my sleeve, you know, my heart on my sleeve and my skin color just shows it. I suppose you feel the same. Like I feel so proud to be Indigenous and be an Australian. And like, I think going to the games just like meant the world to me. It's like, you know, I see, like going through the headquarters, that made me feel so proud, man. Like,
yeah,
just seeing all the dot work and all the, like the map of Australia and all the tribes, like it's what I strive for Australia to look like in the future. And, you know, I didn't really understand the concept of being patriotic, but like for me now I understand, like I'm Australian and I'm Indigenous, and I just want everyone to, you know, love and respect and cherish, you know, just be proud of our culture all together as Australians. So, yeah.
I love that. I love that, man. That's awesome. And I guess my next question is, do you feel a sense of pressure from the community, from Australia to perform? Or because I used to earlier on, you know, and as an athlete, I think you just learn through experiences and you grow. I used to feel this sense of pressure, you know, like the community, you know, you speak about different heritage, the South Sudanese, and because I'm not just doing it for myself. I'm doing it for a lot of communities, a lot of different people. And at the start, it felt like pressure, but then Tokyo, for instance, it did not feel like pressure at all. It was more of a fuel. I guess, where are you in that timeline? And how do you...
Yeah, I think, I've never felt the pressure on me from my community to have to win. I've always felt their support, just saying, like, if anything, like, the support became, like, when I was like, oh, no matter what happens, I'm like, look, you tell, like, just tell me that I'm going to win and then be there to pat me on the back afterwards. Like, it's like, I understand where you, like, you're coming from. You're coming from a beautiful place, and I love that. It's like, look, the history is not written yet. I can go there, I can win a medal. Just don't have to like put that doubt in my mind, because like, yeah, there's a lot of demons that you battle with like the whole time. And yeah, me and Harry, it was just like the one thing that we didn't want anyone to say, and we had to start putting out. It was like, he told his family and I told my family, it's like, look, whenever you speak to me and you talk about it, just don't say no matter what. It's like, because by the sounds of it, it's like you're betting against me, and I don't like that. Yeah, but I understand everyone was coming from a great place, but you know, I've never felt pressure from any of my friends or family, like from them, but I've put it on myself. You know, only, I'm pretty sure, one time. And that was the last nationals to go to the Olympics. I was like, look, I haven't lost the nationals in forever. I was like, I've only lost one nationals. I was like, that was my first one. I was like, I cannot drop the ball here. I was like, this, if I drop the ball here, this is my Olympic dream over. And I'm just going to be like sitting back watching everyone else go to the games. But other than that, I've never really felt the pressure on me.
Yeah. But you know, to be honest though, sometimes we do drop the ball. Sometimes we do fumble. It's part of the sports, and probably one of my biggest fumble, and I'm kind of scared to say this, but the 800 meters, I don't think I've ever seen anyone false start. I false started that one time at an 800 meter race, and it was just like, man, I don't know if I was devastated or embarrassed from false starting, but I guess my question is, how do you pick yourself back up? Because this is a great question for everyone listening, obviously, because especially during COVID now, we're constantly fumbling, and it's not even the worst thing. It's not even under our control. Like, things just happen, you know, training, lockdowns. We're so lucky to be in Perth where we can go to the gyms, and we're not even wearing a mask over here, but there's so many people around Australia right now just going through it and feeling like they're fumbling, but at the same time, it's not their fault. And sometimes it's like, how do you pick yourself back up?
Yeah. Like, I've said it on my Instagram sometimes, like, a lot of us athletes, you know, that we tend to put out a lot of good content, and it's very fake. And I wanted people to know that. I'm like, look, you probably see 90% of me doing well. I was like, when I feel good. And I'm like, man, I feel just as bad, probably, like, you know, 50-50, you know, I have my good days, I have my bad days. I have great relationships with my coach and with my girlfriend, and pretty much just coming home to that and to them relationships that, that we've cultivated so well, kind of just, you know, it always makes me do feel better. Another real good tie that I have that I don't get to practice much often is going out to my country and walking in bush and things like that. It's a very peaceful feeling for me. I did a road trip up with my girlfriend two Christmases ago, and we went up to Exmouth, and just being on land was just unreal. I came back and I felt so good. I was like, I'm going to train the house down, man. Like everything feels like it's up here. So you know, I know what, you know, can cheer me up, and just singing music and things like that. Like, spending time with my nieces and nephew, just simple things in life. I know that at some point, like, sports can feel like a job. So, you know, you need to take a little bit of a break from whatever type of thing that you kind of excessively do, just to refresh your mind and refresh your body.
Yeah, and we spoke so much about off the boxing ring, and I guess I spoke to Harry Garside last week, and I got a little bit insight into his mindset and his training philosophy and stuff like that. I guess my first question is, what does training look like, and how many times a week do you train, and what's the balance between strength and actually getting in a ring and sparring? How does that all work? Like, what's a week for you look like?
Yeah, so most of the other guys on the team, they get to do three odd sessions a day. I can only do two because I work for 8 hours in the middle of the day. But usually I'll be running two to three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the morning, and doing boxing in the afternoon predominantly, like pads four times a week, or pads slash bag and box on a Tuesday and a Saturday. In Perth, I think not having the numbers, I feel like anyone in sports that lives in Perth feels a bit secluded, a bit isolated from the rest of the country to be able to get, you know, better training, better competition and things like that. So I guess I've made do with being over here as much as I possibly could. I see that you go around the world and you train and all that there and get the best competition as possible. I think, like, for me going forward, I need to change some things, whether it's like being over the eastern states more, hopefully the borders open up and that, just to make travel much easier, and probably even basing myself over there at some point soon. I just know that being around here, there's no one my size, there's no one even within 10 kilos of me, and then going above that, I've just been practiced sparring with two guys too big, and I think a lot of my faults and in my boxing style have come from that, not being used to people my size punching at my eye level and having people be as quick as me. Usually when I go overseas, I quickly fine-tune that within a few weeks, but you know, I just think being in Australia, competing against guys overseas, like, they've got, you know, 15 guys my size in Thailand that they will spar against, and in all the other countries. So, you know, I need to be around people that are more my size is probably the biggest thing going forwards.
I feel that. And I mean, I guess some advice I give you, I was probably sitting exactly where you are. I don't remember how long ago, but when I moved to Melbourne in 2015, it felt like the biggest sacrifice, because I mean, I was running 800 meters and there was no one running anywhere close, and I felt that I knew I needed to move to the eastern states because the competition was there, and it just kind of sucked that I needed to move to the eastern states because I wanted to be at home and do it at home, and it just felt like the biggest sacrifice. But fast forward 6 years later, it's the greatest opportunity that I've ever had. It's the same reason that we're speaking right now. It's the same reason so many doors have opened. But what feels like a sacrifice right now might actually feel like an opportunity down the track, which is, I always kind of look at that and reflect on it. It was the hardest decision I made. But if someone told me 5 years ago, you're going to make this much progress and do this, it would have never felt like a sacrifice. I would have just made it like that. I guess my question then, how do you make such big decisions like that? Because me, it was really based on my values, and family was at the top, and that's why it was so hard. I just didn't want to move away from family.
Did you have a partner at that time?
No.
Okay.
No, so, I did, 2015. That was another tough one, because the distance as well was pretty tough to kind of decide on it.
Yeah, so I guess, like, it's the same thing. I've got to worry about my partner. We've been together for 7 years now, which is not a short amount of time. But like, she wants to move with me. When I do make the move, so I can't just think about myself just going into some, you know, dingy old place and just making the move and doing it properly, like make sure that she's got support over there and things like that. I want to move to Queensland, and box with the Maloney brothers. And I've got the support over there already. I've been speaking to their coach and their manager and things like that. And they're keen to have me over there. I need to finish my apprenticeship. They understand that. It's just about, they want me to go to the Commonwealth Games and do very well. Like, it helps us all out. So between now and the Comm Games, probably won't make the move between there and now, but I'm going to get over there as much as I can. And then after that, probably seal the deal and make the move. But, you know, the decision's not just up to me. It's like between me and my partner and making sure that everything fits well while we go over there, because, like, you know, happy wife, happy life. Like I said, if them relationships aren't being nurtured and things like that, your sporting career can really go down really quick. And I give credit to her, because if she wasn't in my life when she came, probably wouldn't have been able to stick to boxing as well as I did. She's removed me from a lot of the bad influences and, like, you know, just kept me focused and goal orientated for a long time. So I do believe, you know, if she's not around, that I'll be drinking a lot more Coke and bloody eating more chocolate and just doing all the silly things that I shouldn't really be doing. We've been having a conversation about the move for like the last 2 years. I even brought her over to the training camp when we was getting ready for the Olympics, just to get a feel for like the place. I'm going to miss my mum and all that, but, like, you know, as long as I have someone to keep me stable over there, would be good.
Yeah, I like that. And interestingly, I actually know Sophie from athletics, and obviously very good to have a partner that's very supportive, but she also understands the demands, because she was dominating the track.
Yeah, man.
So early. So she understands the need of the athlete. And as you said, happy wife, happy life. And I think that's really important, because I guess you gotta service everything around you, because at the end of the day, you might be an athlete, but you're a person differently in your sports. And sports, the way I see sports, is an opportunity. Like, you never know what's going to happen. You never know if you're going to have a good year or a bad year. You can do things to obviously help, and injury sometimes happens. So when you don't have that sports, you got to service those relationships with you. So that's actually really good advice, and I admire that. And I guess one of my final questions is, how's your running? And I mean, we're both in Perth, so I guess what I'm saying is we need to sort out.
Yeah, 100%, bro. I'm trying to lose some weight at the moment. I can't give too much away for the reason, but pretty much I need to get my walking weight down for my next weight cut. So I put it out there. I got now between now and start of January to get my walking weight down for my weight cut next year. So I was thinking about it. I was like, oh man, I need to start running some longer distances and just like start trimming this weight off. So I had that conversation at the start of the week, and now that you messaged me today, I was like, oh hell yeah, let's do it.
No, I'm 100% down, and I think that's the beauty of our sports is, yes, you focus on your sport and your craft, because that's a platform. It makes you who you are, but there's also so many important things. It's the journey and the people you kind of meet, and like, why not get a session together and train together, which is
definitely. Is there any other type of training that you do that's like pretty much not running specific? Like so for me, like boxing, you know, running's like a core part of it just because of fitness. So like, do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, and I got the answers for you. I do a bunch of pool running. It's intense. Yep.
I've seen that. It's got a float, hey.
And you got the resistance band. And you know, the thing with pool running is you can train as much as you want in the pool, just because there's not a lot of impact on the ground, there's not much impact. So the pool running, you do quite a bit. I get on the bike. I love the bike. Get on the bike around the foreshore and stuff like that, that type of training. And I used to do actually quite a bit of boxing.
Oh, fantastic.
Because boxing, like, it's the greatest endurance. Like, you got to have a lot
And it doesn't get easier, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, like especially mentally, I find boxing helped a lot in track, because the boxing stuff that you go through, it's like, man, you go run 800, you're like, nah, I can get through it. Because at the end of the day, mostly mental. So, yeah, I think we have some good opportunities to kind of train together while we're here.
No, that's sick. And with when you're running, like, you would have a game plan as how you run your first 200 and then your next 200 and then your last 400. Like, can you give me a little bit of insight on that?
Yeah, definitely. So when I run an 800, I have a plan, but I also know that plan might not work just because the first 200 is the most important part of the 800 and where you're cutting in. So if my plan is to be top three and somehow I end up at the back, you got to stay calm and you got to not panic. The best thing I'll tell everyone is just stay present. You don't even think about moves, because if you're thinking about moves, someone has already probably made it. You got to be automatic, and that's the beauty of sports. You train for so long as muscle memory, you should be able to just automatically pick things up. It's the same reason we get injured and can come back quicker than everyone else, because it's muscle memory. So it should just be the same thing. You practice at training, you practice back on the track, and of course you don't always get it right, but when you do get it right, it's just beautiful. You know, sometimes when you have that beautiful training session, it's just everything's clicking. It's like, wow.
Yeah, definitely, man.
That's like, it's like motivating, right? It's like, just wow.
Yeah, 100%. I know how you feel. Like, there could be a day that you get to the track or you get to the boxing gym and you're not feeling quite good and you're just on the song and you go, oh yeah, like I'm feeling it today. I feel good, man. Like, get me a fight, get me a race now. Like, I could beat anyone. Yeah, it's fantastic. Like, this is them endorphins, and you know, there's so me. I feel like I don't know whether I have more bad days than good days, but you remember the good days rather than the bad. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and I guess last question is, what are you doing tomorrow?
Tomorrow is Saturday. Well, that answers your question. I don't know. I'm so bad. I'm so unorganized. People don't understand how unorganized I am. Like, oh man, I'm going
tomorrow, Burswood Park, in Perth. I've got a community barbecue. I'd love to see you there, you and Sophie. If you guys have the time, I'll send you the link, and come have a barbecue. Come say hello if you have the time, and we'll set up training schedule from there.
100%, bro. Yeah, I love to eat. As long as the missus says yes, which I think she's down to see you again. It's been a long time, she always says. It should be sweet.
Awesome, man. Thanks again for jumping in my Spikes podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on it, and I look forward to seeing your progress and following your journey. And most importantly, I look forward to seeing you and training together.
I appreciate it, brother. Much love.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.